The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hey-o, good morning. Welcome to the Curry and Claypo Show. We do it on Facebook Live every Thursday from about 8 until 9 o'clock, and then around 9:30 we'll be on Fox 6. We have a wonderful partnership with, of course, WBRC, Janice Rogers and Mike Deverly and the entire crew, Mickey and Toy, all those guys. We'll look forward to being Claire, who's a friend of yours, will be on
Fox 6. No, actually, Claire's not there anymore.
What? Claire Huddleston, she's got a new show.
Right, but she's not on Good Day.
Well, no, she's at 11 o'clock.
Yes.
But she's part of the WBRC, which is part of
Yes. I just wanted...
Colin Gaston. We have dinner at his house on
Friday
nights.
That's right, on
exactly. Colin invites us over to the house, and we enjoy having dinner with the GM of Fox 6. He loves us. We're a pain in his ass, and he loves us for it. We will not let it go. God, Curry and Claypo on Fox 6 again. What the hell are we doing, guys? Are we running out of content? Why do we have these two knuckleheads on a Thursday? We're like, hello, we want to be on your OTA.
We are.
OTC.
You know, we are on Good... Now, Good Day Extra. So they have Good Day.
They have Good Day. They have Good Day Extra.
They have Good Day Extra.
Extra Action, and they have Good Day After Hours, and they have
Good Day. No, we are... So there's Good Day, there's Good Day Extra, and it really is a whole show. It's a half an hour show.
Oh, I know.
And we are Curry and Claypo. We are the Curry and Claypo part of Good Day Extra, which is at the... And
yeah, we're filler, man. And then they got the 4-on-4, which is our idea. This is the idea that we came up with.
Yes, I'm on the 4.
And
I'm on
if you
the
watch
four
Fox 6, half the stuff they air is our idea, stuff we came to the GM about a year and a half ago. So we got some ideas where we could help Curry and Claypo. Because, listen, in all truth, Fox 6 is cool.
Yes.
They're super fun.
Yep.
And, I was on this other radio show, the Jay Barker thing, which I don't know what's going on with that anyway, but with Matt Coulter the other day, and we were talking about news anchors on television, and I was mentioning Fox 6. And Matt Coulter, by the way, if you pull up a picture of him, he looks like Ron Burgundy, in the 70s. I mean, he's got mustache, he's got the hair, he is spot on Ron Burgundy.
Right.
So, well, he was bringing up WKRP, there was some anniversary of WKRP, and I said, what worked really well for that show is you had the token black guy who worked overnights, because every classic rock station had a black guy, and Venus Flytrap, and you had the Johnny, what's his face, that did afternoons, which was me.
Yeah.
And then you had Herb Tarlick, who was like Herb Winches.
Yes.
And you had Les Nessman, who was like Jim Dent, this guy. I mean, every radio station had that guy,
and
it was perfect. But anyway, but they're super cool. They allow us to come on the air with them, and we really appreciate that. And of all the TV stations, they are by far the coolest. They're the most... not in any political terms, but they're the most liberal with their time. They're willing to get outside the box a little bit, actually laugh and have fun.
Yes.
And most news people, I mean, I used to hang out the circuit with Janice Rogers.
Yes.
She's fun.
Yes.
We used to get after it a little bit. TV people want to have fun, but they have to stay inside that box.
They do.
They're news people. They're journalists.
They are. But you know what? I was just thinking the way you said that. I was thinking more up and down the line because, you know, I work with their 4 o'clock team.
Yeah.
And they're almost all of their anchors are that way. I was thinking about Morgan Hightower, Sarah Verser, who's been there for years. There is this there is this professional comfort that they have.
Yeah.
Right? It's not bunched up. None of them are bunched up. But they do an amazing job covering the news, but it's in a way, like you said, it doesn't feel like you're talking to somebody that's an android.
Yeah.
It's got a very natural...
Well, it's a culture.
Yeah.
I talked about this to Mark Ingram the other day on our UAB director's chair about how you change the culture inside an athletic department. You can throw a lot of money in a situation and it doesn't work. You can make the right hires. You have to change the culture of the inside. And if you get inside, they're laughing, they're kibitzing, they're cutting
Did
up.
Did you just say kibitzing?
They're kibitzing, that's what my mom used to say, kibitzing. They're kibitzing,
that's
they cut
Yiddish
up and they're
term.
Having a good time.
That's Jewish.
My mom used to always say,
is your mom kibitzing. Jewish?
And she used to say she's going to whip my hiney, and I never knew what a hiney
was. Your mom Jewish?
No.
You sure?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
She's German.
That's okay, you mean German. You mean German. The culture thing is really important. The culture thing is really important.
And it takes a long time.
And I
did this with Michael Coleman from
Mission
Minded as well,
about
changing the culture inside, it takes a long time to do that. You can't just change the culture overnight. It takes a while because it's a culture.
And I think that's the thing. You look at businesses or organizations of any kind, including athletic departments. It doesn't matter. News departments. Everybody talks about culture. Everybody talks about how important it is. And a lot of times, and everyone will say, you know, our culture is not good right now.
Yeah.
You know, we got to make change. And so, particularly in organizations, there is, you know, nobody wants to spend 10 years changing a culture. They want to do it quickly. So they bring in consultants. Mm-hmm. They write, you know, different vision and mission statements. They have programming. They have courses. They have social interactions. And that's all great. I mean, that's all important. But the number one thing that happens or that doesn't happen is leadership doesn't stay with the cultural change front and center. Mm-hmm. Because they put it in place, and then leadership will go, now we need to move on to something else. You can't. You can still do your business, but if you want to change the culture in an organization, it has to stay front and center, mm-hmm. because otherwise people just drift back to whatever it is that they're doing. And to your point, you are fundamentally changing how people think and feel, mm-hmm. in that workplace. And we all know it's not easy to change the way people think and feel. And if you want everyone to go in a certain direction, it has to be so prominent that literally people, it's not cult-like, but it's got to feel that much. It's got to permeate every single aspect.
The thing that changes cultures, though, are people.
Yes.
You could throw millions and millions of dollars at a program, whether it's a college football program, a business or whatever, and rebuild these things around it. Now, as your culture gets better and then you invest money into things, that can certainly enhance your culture.
Yes.
But it's always a person. I think about Nick Saban, obviously created a culture at Alabama. Lee Iacocca goes into Chrysler and just turns that thing around. Dusty Baker with the Houston Astros. Dusty Baker was with the Cincinnati Reds, took them to the playoffs. Everywhere he goes, he takes teams to the playoffs. And he does it basically with the same crew. And you're like, how is that possible? It takes the people. Elon Musk, I know people are hating what's going on, and that's what happens when you try to change a culture, because a lot of people get pissed off really quick, because you have to shake the cage a little bit. It's not to say, listen, if you were at Meta, at Facebook, and you thought that they were going to be able to keep up with where they were at, obviously during the pandemic, they hired, I don't know how many thousands of people they hired, because everyone was on Facebook.
13,
right now, their revenue's off 50% in the last quarter. 50%.
But did you see their stock went up as soon as they...
Well, sure it did.
As they,
yeah,
like,
because
off,
they're trying to make it right.
Yeah, yeah.
And stocks go up based on confidence. You're like, yeah, we need to cut some fat. So if you were hired during the pandemic and thought you were going to have a job after it, then that's on you. You should have been looking for another job, because there's no way they could have possibly kept that up. Now you're going to be laid off, so you possibly can come back as they grow again. But the Twitter thing is, sometimes you got to cut the fat. I'm not saying Elon Musk is a hatchet man, but he's a brilliant businessman. He's went in there. And right now, that's why I say, be careful what you're saying on social media. Don't be belittling or hammering anybody, because you'll be the first person they won't rehire when things start blowing up. Well, and Elon Musk, obviously, has done a wonderful job at building everything he's done. So, but he's going to change the culture. And I know there's all this stuff. This is horrible. Now I have to pay for my blue mark and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not always. So let's flip the other side. Because I have seen many, many an organization where they decide we're going to change the culture.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, just because change the culture doesn't mean improve the culture.
No, you have to have the right person to do it.
No. But what I'm saying is I've seen organizations where they're going to change the culture.
Yeah.
And what they change it into is a toxic, nasty, horrible environment.
Yeah.
When we say change the culture, there's change the culture to improve it.
Mm-hmm.
There is change the culture to address some business need. But doing that doesn't always improve the culture for people.
But don't you think, too, and much like you and I had this interesting conversation about the educational spiritual experience.
Yes.
Something that happens over a long period of time. We can have many epiphanies and all, wow, and a light switch comes on. It doesn't work. 99% of us are growing and learning, and more people around us see us change before we see the change ourselves. If you're a guy coming in saying, all right, folks, we need to change the culture around here, that's not something you need to proclaim. They know the culture is bad, regardless of whether your sales are good, bad, you got a couple bad apples, you have a cancer inside your sales force, whatever it is. A culture, it's a very subtle situation. Sometimes you don't always see the changes, but it starts feeling different as time goes on, and that's where the culture changes. A lot of times, they'll bring in a guy who says, I can change the culture around here, and he's not the leader to change the culture. And he tries to make too many obvious materialistic changes.
Which may be fine. So I think we got to be careful with the word culture. You may bring somebody in. A company may be struggling.
Yeah.
And look, if a company is struggling, they can be struggling financially because of market conditions, because of the situation, and they can have great people and a great culture, and it's just not, the market's not supporting what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You can have super healthy people. Okay. But also, I literally had this conversation yesterday with a client. When you've got people problems, conflicts, jealousy, unresolved problems that are not spoken about,
burnout,
all of that kind of stuff, your company may function fine for a while, but it starts getting pulled down in various ways. And a lot of times what leaders will do, they'll look at, okay, what's our strategic plan? Or what's our, you know, we need to do a reorg. Mm-hmm. We need to move up. And it's not funny, but it's funny to me because you're avoiding the problem.
Yeah.
In the case I'm thinking about, these five people on this team are bringing down the entire sales force because they can't agree.
Mm-hmm.
And it is absolutely amazing how literally five adults who are smart act like five-year-olds and will not agree. And the toxicity of that in an organization is huge because it doesn't just impact morale and all that kind of stuff. If it's a sales team, you're not closing deals.
Yeah.
So to your point, coming in and saying we're changing the culture, sometimes it's got a little bit of a, you know, panache and people want to hear it. But what you're really coming in and say is, we need to do things differently here.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's tactical. Some of it's the way we treat people. And you're right. It's okay for a leader to sort of make that declarative statement. Great.
Yeah.
But then it's everything else that falls.
Yeah.
And the day that it starts falling off is before it's been adopted is the day that your organizational cultural change.
One of the many things you can hear on the Tony Curry Radio podcast, if you go mm-hmm. just search Tony Curry Radio podcast, Curry with a K, we have over 1,000 podcasts up now. And one of my favorite shows is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman, who mm-hmm. was formerly with the Jimmy Hill Mission, really turned that place around. People with Jimmy Hill Mission say, he didn't turn it around. He turned it around. And then he left and went down to Montgomery Food Bank, and they're responsible for roughly 35 counties in the state of Alabama, more than half the counties. And you know, whenever you, and I went through, I think, 12 or 13 GMs when I was at Cumulus at the radio station over the course of a 30-year career. And it wigs us out whenever a new GM comes in because you don't know, we've had, and there's, he went through a list of seven different types of bosses. I can't remember all of them. There's the hatchet man,
yep.
the one that comes in, he knows he's only going to be there for 2 years.
And he's right.
Cut the fat, people yep. are going to hate you, and then get out.
Right.
And then we're going to see where we're at.
He's not there about to change culture.
No, there's the one that wants to be your friend. They invite you over to his house on weekends. That never works.
Nope.
You have the volcano boss who just absolutely berates and goes crazy and just gets in your face about every little thing you got going on. You have the one that actually wants to, there's only one out of the seven that's like the best boss. And that's the one that has the, I call it the open door policy. The open door policy boss doesn't work either because my door is always open. You got any questions? Stop by and see me. And that door is open for about 3 months. And then every time you walk past the boss's door, it's closed or he's gone. It's like he's tired of the shit. He's like over it.
Yep.
But the one that is open-minded, that is willing to network, that is willing to look at other businesses that he's in competition with and try to learn from those particular things and grow that way. And what Michael Coleman does, and I'd love to work for him someday. He's great in some capacity. He's great because he sits down with people and he listens to their ideas. And he's had people with the Montgomery Food Bank that have been there for 40 years. He's got people there that have been there for 6 months. And obviously it's a non-for-profit, so you're talking about a different type of employee, right? But they get paid. So it's just really interesting. And he is slowly, but he didn't come in and say, it's time to change the culture of this place. But he knew what he had to do in order to optimize the Feeding America platform through the Montgomery Food Bank, and he's doing a great job.
Think about this. Think about me as a psychologist. And somebody comes in and is struggling.
Yeah.
I could say, you know, listen, I've told you about this, how I scared my first patient off, mm-hmm. right? Because I could say they come in and, you know, they're like, we're going to change, we are going to fix you. We're going to change you. I can tell you exactly what we need to do, and you need to make these six changes, and you need to think about the world in this way, and if you do that, you are going to. Is A, they listen, and they listen to all ideas. B, they are willing to both consider the idea, but then also explain, be willing to explain why we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
I do not like the, we're not doing that because I said so.
But
leaders will say, well, I don't have to give a rationale. Why should I always have to give a rationale? Because people perform better. They will work better if they understand why you said no. I see a lot of leaders, I don't need to justify. No, technically in your position, you don't need to justify, but you're dealing with an equal human.
Yeah.
And that's the part. People get wigged out when they're treated as children, or yep. they perceive they're treated as children. And then, you know,
the first thing I thought of is here is different with parents and kids because they're not equals.
Right.
So you don't ever want to use, because I have an 18-year-old son, you don't ever want to use because I said so. That works when they're 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. But as they get a little older, they do want explanations of why you feel the way you do. And sometimes it's just enough of like, listen, you have to trust me here. You have to trust me on this. Just trust me. This is not a good decision you're making. And
it is, and you know, that point, which you just said, there does come a point where, whether in an organization, if you're in a leadership position, where you're essentially saying, I hear what you're saying. I don't think that that's a good way for us to go.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll give one or two reasons, but ultimately there is a little bit of, because I said so. Mm-hmm. But you don't lead with it. You're 18-year-old. You're saying, look, I hear what you're saying. I disagree with it. Mm-hmm. I've been around the block, and I'm gonna make a call right now, yep. and you're not going to get to do it.
Yeah. No, it's great. We're gonna talk about losing. It's the first time in history that UAB, Auburn, and Alabama all went to overtime. In the same day, and let alone they all lost. People are like, if they ever all lost in the same day in overtime, I'm like, no, they haven't even gone to overtime. It was amazing. I was at the UAB game, then I came home and watched the Auburn game, watched the Alabama game. It was just horrible. So we'll talk about losing, and we're going to be on Fox 6, and you and I are kind of like, we're going to talk about losing. There's so many other juicy stories we can get out there, but it's Fox 6. It's their station. They could do what they want, and so we'll play along. So I was trying to figure out an angle on it. You know, outside, you know, we shouldn't take our sports too seriously. Remember to see the Dr. Pepper commercial where the guy's skipping the rocks and they come up on there like, we need to talk to you. And he's like, what's up? And they're like, you're upset that our team didn't make the playoffs. He's like, hey, it's a ball and a bunch of kids playing a game. And of course, the wife loses it. Oh my gosh, he's lost his mind. Why aren't you in the message boards?
Yeah.
What's wrong with
you? Yeah.
We want to be part of winning things in life.
Absolutely.
We want to be part of bigger groups in life. Even leaders do to a point. That's why Facebook groups take off. You can do divorced women who like to bowl who have your basset hounds and be part of a group.
People like looking at deer.
Yeah. And we want to be part of winning organizations, too. And when you're part of, and a lot of people don't like fans that hop on board, you know, they're bandwagoners, right? As soon as a team starts going 6-7-0, all of a sudden they're an Arizona State fan. Well, you know, yeah, it's fine. When you're in a situation, and I'll use the Lakers, for example, it's a really tough situation because the Lakers have won championships out the yin-yang, and they're just a bad basketball team right now, and so you must deal with it. So
who must deal with it? Me?
Well, a Lakers fan. I know you're a Lakers fan. You must deal with it. Yes. But you also have your priorities. Now, I think the fan that looks forward to college football season, I'll use college football because we're down here in Birmingham, that their whole life changes the first weekend of September. They're up at 5 o'clock with the Boston Butts on the smoker.
That's
they're
great.
They're going to T-Town or they're going to Auburn, and they're setting up the whole weekend. They do that, and I'm totally cool with that. And they have every stitch of clothing that's available through Auburn, UAB, or Alabama. Their season totally changes. Their wife's into it. Their kids are into it. They got the pom-poms. And when their team loses, they have a bad day. I get that. I understand that. Because not only is it their team, but they're also invested in that team. Not only mentally, but physically and financially, they're invested
in
that team. And when you have a financial investment, you almost feel like a Green Bay Packer fan. You feel like you have ownership of that team. You feel like you should have your opinions noted. Why are they playing this guy? And why'd they make that play? And why should they fire this OC? And why are they keeping this DC? And so I get that. My point is you have to prioritize your priorities. College football season priorities get just totally messed up. Because what used to be college football down here in July and August all of a sudden is like the second most important thing in your life.
Yeah, it's a little dangerous. You're telling them,
a little dangerous.
You sound like me.
As your team goes, so do your emotions and so do your feelings. We know that when Alabama and Auburn win football games, our economy's better. A lot better. I used to make a shit ton more money when Alabama was undefeated than when they were 4-3. Because everybody wanted to spend money. People were going out watching ball games. Yep. They were undefeated. We got a good football team. We're going to be in the best. And so I get that. But my angle was you know, it's okay to change your priorities in life. You know, I always say God, family, work, whatever.
Where's football?
Football will be fourth at this point. But it's always been fourth for me.
It has to be. It has to, because
can I exude a little bit more exhilaration and love okay. my program when they're doing really well and
that's
get more
different.
Excited about it and talk about it? Yeah, I've been doing sports radio for 20 years, so I was getting paid to talk about it. So yeah, it's super important to me. I always told people the last thing, don't ever say you didn't see a game. When someone calls in and says, "Did you see that Toledo Buffalo game on Thursday?" "Yes, I did." Don't ever say I didn't see the game, because then it looks like you don't know what you're doing. Make it up. Let them tell the story while you're doing that, get on the computer and then start talking about like you saw the entire game. If you're a sports person, you watch 60 football games every Saturday, all at the same time. Don't say you didn't see the game.
So table the priority for a second. I'm going to take you on a tangent. When I first moved here, and I was listening to y'all. When I first moved here, I listened to you on classic rock.
Yeah.
Fine. But then when you moved over to sports, West Coast, I like football, but like nobody knows it like it is here.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And I so remember people calling in to your show saying, "You know, I was looking at my VHS tape of the 93 game, Gators and Alabama, fourth quarter, third play. Remember that?" And I remember that. And y'all are...
Sure.
Y'all are like, "Of course."
"Oh, of course we do."
And I remember for the first time thinking,
"So take us through that play again for us. What do you want to talk about? Take us through that play again. What did you see? What did you see in that play?" Before I answer, what did you see?
Well, and God love the person who called. Like, the fact, I had this visual image of some guy with just stacks of VHS tape. And the psychologist in me was like, "That's pretty scary. Like, that's a little scary that you literally are reliving not ultimate plays." I understand that. But these were like, you know, third quarter, third down and 10, and it wasn't a pick six. It just was, you know, we didn't pull enough to the right.
Yeah.
If you're that kind of fan, great. That's your
hobby.
They're
fanatics. They're the ones that spend the money.
That's fine. Them. But it's what you were going to. The reason the priorities are important are when you start defining yourself and self-worth by 18, and you don't do it consciously, like you don't say you're doing it, but all of your examples, when your team loses, you are, of course you're upset, but you literally are taking it out on your family. You cannot perform as well at work. It takes an entire week to determine how you're going to be for the next week, and God forbid they should have a bye, you're in the bye. When you're at that point, you've lost yourself.
Yeah.
And that's hard to go up against fanatical fans and say that, but you have two classes of fanatical fans. You've got the ones who are just all out the way you describe. At the same time, if you ask them, "Where does this sit relative to your life?" they will describe it as, "It's a passion. It's an intense hobby. It's something that I absolutely love."
You should be bummed
out. Which is
fine. You should be sad when your team loses.
But you don't.
It shouldn't ruin your life.
Exactly.
It shouldn't ruin your life.
You should be able
to. But we're not being critical here. Because I had two friends of mine who couldn't do anything on Sunday. They didn't go to church. They didn't get out of bed. They drank all day. They're like, it was the most horrible day of my life because I know Alabama's out of the playoffs. They're not out of the playoffs, by the way, because LSU may lose this weekend. And if they lose their last game of the year, Alabama has an inside shot. But that being said, a two-loss team's never gotten to the playoffs.
Yep.
But that's neither here nor there. But the fact that they knew they were out 9 games into the season or 10 games into the season, it ruined their day. Now, Monday, they came around a little bit. And they started getting better, and they were okay. And that's fine. I know fans that are like that. And certainly since Nick Saban got there, you know, 15 years ago.
Well, the expectations.
The expectation's been unbelievable. I think he's only lost 2 games prior to the Iron Bowl during the regular season, only one other time.
Right.
I think that was his first season, or maybe the second season. I'm not sure. But I'm a little hesitant because I know how fevered it's a religion down here. How
it's
people
fine.
Feel about Carolina football. It's fine.
But listen, if it literally takes out the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And I don't care whether it's football or anything else. That's pathetic.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be psychological here and clutch ass, but you make your own joy. You're like, you're full of shit.
No,
you do. If you're counting on your wife or your job performance or your exterior hobby to make you happy,
no.
Fulfillment
right.
happy. I'm not talking about happy. I'm
God.
Talking about joyousness. Then you probably got some priorities you
Is
need to rearrange
print?
A little
yes.
bit.
Yes. No,
you
I'm
You have to make yourself, yes. but we're not here this makes me happy. If you win the lottery, yes, you should be happy. That's great. Should it change your life? Perhaps.
Yes.
But, I mean, if you're not a happy, and this is great because the guy who won the $2.04 billion thing in California, they talked to the guy who won the $1.6 billion several months ago. And his life has been turned upside down.
Of course, because
he was cranky and not in a good place before he won the lottery. He said, yes, it's surreal, and for a few months, it's the most unbelievable thing to know that I'll never have to worry about money again.
Yep.
He said, but if you're miserable before you win the lottery, you're going to be miserable after you win the lottery. And it's hard to believe because most people will never have the opportunity to have more money they know what to do with. But I know a lot of people that have a lot more money than I do that are in a much worse shape emotionally and psychologically than I'll
ever be. Because the money solves lots of problems. Mm. It absolutely does. We should not say money doesn't. Of course it does.
But it creates a lot.
It creates new challenges that you have to navigate. And so if you've been irritable, if you've had a rough time navigating challenges mm-hmm. before, now you're just navigating a different set of challenges.
It's not going to change your relationship dynamics. It's not going to change your health.
No. Nope.
All of a sudden, if you got cancer and you won the $1 billion, your cancer doesn't give a shit.
No.
There's a lot of things in life that, and again, money can't buy you love. Money can't mask those things.
No.
If you're having a difficult time with your wife and you're on the brinks of a divorce and you win the lottery and all of a sudden you're in love again, you got major effing
issues.
Well,
unless, and we talked about this, about the, what'd you call it, educational
spiritual experience,
okay.
Yeah.
So winning the lottery can position you psychologically to approach the world differently.
Absolutely.
So, and in that case, yes.
And we would all love that opportunity.
Yeah, of course.
Let me try to do it, because we know 75% of all people who have won over $1 million or more are either dead or some type of drug addiction.
That's a million.
They end up shooting people. They end up getting divorces.
Do they count? What about the $1 billion ones?
No, there's only a couple of those, my friend.
Thank God it's in California, because you know how much rents are?
Well, you know what, too? In California, they don't have the anonymous lottery winner law, too. The guy who won in Chicago a few months ago came out in the duck suit because he didn't want to be recognized. He was holding the check. It was kind of funny. In California, they must recognize who won the lottery. So this guy is going to be front and center.
Oh my God.
And I think, you know, Charles Barkley did the best thing when he got his first contract in the NBA. And I forget what it was, $800,000, something like that. He's making a lot more money now than he ever made in the NBA. And he tells a story. He was in town for an uncle's funeral. And I said, you know, and we were off mic, and I said, so tell me about this uncle. He goes, I really don't know the guy. And I said, well, what are you doing here? He goes, he's the only guy out of my entire family that didn't ask me for anything after I got my first NBA contract. And he said, so what I did He said, man, there were cousins I didn't even know coming out of the woodwork, writing me letters. Hey, Uncle Charles, you know, blah, 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 blah. Their mom was writing out the letter for him. And he went to almost every person and asked and said, listen, I'm going to give you something.
I remember.
I'm
going to
give you what you need, whether it's a business venture, whether you need dentures, whether you need to get out of business debt, whatever it is. And obviously, I'm not going to give you always what you want, but I'm going to write you a check for what you need, and then don't ever ask me again for anything. And I'm happy to do it. And he did it. And he said, this is the only uncle who never asked for a damn thing from him his entire life. And he said, and I won't go to any other's funeral, but I'll go to his funeral because he never asked. And if he had, I would have helped him out. He said, but 99% of the people said, you know, that 25 grand you gave me, I ran through and I just need a little bit more. And he's like, no.
That's sad. I mean,
and he said, when he did that, what'd they do? They got angry with him.
How dare you? You've got all this money and
ruined relationships. And he's like, you know, when I didn't have any money, we all got along and Thanksgiving was great. Now people won't talk to me because I won't stroke them a check. And I said, man, that is, he goes, money will tear apart families. And it does. It's unfortunate.
Yep.
So anyway, but we'll talk about losing on Fox 6 at 9:35 this morning. Just prioritizing the whole situation. I think some fans do get angry that some fan base people aren't more angry that they lost, which I think is funny.
I think it's
because
terrible.
I'm like, you do you, I'll do me. It doesn't really bother me, like the Dr. Pepper commercial. And it's like, what's wrong with
you? You're not
me?
A real fan, Tony.
Because I got
you don't bleed.
I got a life. I got other things going on in my life. And when they win, I'm happy. When they lose, am I sad? Absolutely. Does it rip my heart out? The UAB Blazers lost that overtime game this weekend. It ripped my heart. It was a rainbow right before the beginning of the OT. And I was with my son, and I said, man, this is God shining down on the UAB Blazers. It was Blazer orange. I said, they got to win this football game because the rainbow came out. And of course, they lost, and I said, man, it would have been great if they had won. I think I even said a prayer. God, please make the UAB Blazers win today, right? If you got nothing else on your plate today, help us out a little bit.
That's right.
And it bummed me out. But 10 minutes later.
But that's healthy.
Yeah.
Like, that's healthy because you're not putting all of your joy eggs in that basket.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, and there's a real fine line, and the litmus test for me always is the same thing, which is, I don't care how passionate you are, how bummed out you are, you know, you lose, all those sorts of things. If I ask you, honestly, is this just a game?
Mm-hmm.
And don't give me the, oh, it's more than a game. Honestly, in your head, is it just a game that you are a fan of? If you can't say yes, then my concern is that you've lost your sense of identity. And it's not just football. I mean, like, this is anything. This is any sort of pastime that becomes, if you work for the team, if you're a player on the team, then it is a very different thing. And that's what's so interesting to me about fans. If you play for the team, you have to sacrifice everything.
Well, what does Saban say all the time? You know, he sees these rabid fans. He's like, think about how we feel.
Do
you think we want to lose this football game?
Right.
These guys are sweating their asses off for 18 practices a week, and they just put out, you know, 60. How do you think they feel? You think we don't want to win that game? You don't think we thought to make that call? I mean,
that's my favorite. Oh, my God. And the worst is, for me, when the kickers miss a kick.
Yeah. Oh, horrible. Maybe you should work with Aldo Greco. It's the worst feeling in the world. I mean, you're the man or you're the goat. And when you make a 20-yarder, they expect it.
Right.
You know, when you make a 55-yarder, not so much. The other thing is, go ahead.
Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Winner, feeling like a winner or a loser right now?
Oh, he's feeling like a winner.
Why?
Because he just won his last ball game and scored a touchdown in 44 seconds.
What about his divorce and his marriage has gone from? This is what I think is interesting.
It made things just a little easier for him, I think, because he had something to think outside. Obviously, when you're losing.
Yeah, but does he think about it as a winner or loser in life?
Oh, he knows he's a winner in life. He's won 7 Super Bowls.
No, but you see what you're going? You see what you're doing?
Yeah.
But he's also lost a marriage.
But he has. But but you also look at the last thing that just happened to you as well, too, to kind of see where you're at.
That's a deflection.
Listen,
that's
that game right there will determine whether he plays football next year.
No, I understand that. But if we're talking about
Tom Brady, all he's got is his kids, obviously. And he's got his football career. something that he's done for a long period of time that a lot of people would say he gave up a lot of part of his life because.
But right now, if I ask Tom Brady, right now, not in a year from now.
You're saying loser in life?
No, yeah, and I don't want to say loser. Do you feel like right now, if I take the whole of your life, right now, are you in a winning position or a losing position? Now, he's gonna say he's an athlete. He's going to say that.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, on the inside, he has got the football. He's got the career. But he's gone through a divorce. There's a whole lot of loss
I can't get inside Tom Brady's brain. But I'm also thinking about a guy that went sixth in the NFL draft, who was never supposed to be anything.
I'm not talking
he's
about...
He's had a lot of challenges in life that we don't even know about. Yep. And he's got these challenges. And I think he's an adaptive type of guy that can look at this and go, this is just another chapter in my life. I've got my entire life. I'm 45 years old. Obviously, this has happened. She's still alive. It's not to say they can't redeem themselves. He still has his beautiful children, which he wouldn't have without her. And he's got the one from Bridget Moynihan. So he's a very confident individual. If there's one guy that can feel like he's a winner, regardless.
Well, overall, in some, I mean, in summary, yes. Yeah. But I do think, I heard so many commentators say, you know, he was having problems because there were distractions in his personal life. And then, you know, now that that's done.
Yeah, it's not done.
It's not done.
And listen, I don't know if they were 3-5 going to this last ball game because of his divorce or not.
Yeah,
you
I don't know.
Certainly make
I don't...
that acknowledgement. I've been through a divorce. You've been through a divorce. Yep. And when you go through divorce
it takes
sucks.
Everything.
About, it sucks everything out of your brain. And it's very difficult. And some people find joy at work, which I think he does.
Absolutely.
And so it's a great, he can compartmentalize that joy away from what's going on in his personal life, where a lot of people don't have that. Maybe they have a shitty job too. And they're like, great, now I got to get my shitty job after my wife just cheated on me and she just left. I don't know. Something else I want to get into. This is great talk too. Curry and Claypo show, Fox 6 will be on at 9:35 this morning. Something I'm guilty of, and you know this. Mike Griswold is coming out.
Oh, jeez.
And, I'm not going to put, I'm moving, so I'm not going to put Christmas lights up this year unless I get out of this place and find another place to put up
that's
lights.
That's going to kill you not be able to put Christmas lights.
I've done it for 30-something years.
Can you just put them up somewhere?
And it's something my kids love, and they ask me about it. I'm like, I'm going to figure something out. I'm going to figure something out. But when I go on vacations or I have major holidays coming up, I want to make them the best they can. I'm not a planner. I don't go today for 9 o'clock.
No.
But I do get really excited because I know I'm going to be with my family, and there's really no reason. I mean, we went to Tennessee, to Gatlinburg a couple of years ago, and the entire family was sick. I wasn't. It rained the entire time we were up there, and I was like, damn it, we're going to have a good time.
See,
we're going to get
awesome.
Out of here. And
that's awesome.
And I think I flipped it. I think I flipped it because everyone just didn't want to do anything. I said, let's go out and do something. Let's we're together.
Yep.
You know, we got joy with each other. Let's just go find something. And it worked out okay. But when, to go along with losing on the football field, when you expect joy, you're setting yourself up for a fall.
Mm-hmm.
And when you expect them to win championships and win every single weekend, or you expect to have the perfect wedding, or you expect to have the perfect honeymoon, or you expect to have the great meeting with your boss, or you expect things. I mean, listen, there's confidence, and sometimes you can spin things a little bit and get out.
Okay.
But when you go into situations with the expectation that you're going to come out joyous and it doesn't, it hurts twice as hard. So what I'm saying is set yourself up for success and joy, and then play it out. Let it go. See what happens. And certainly don't force your joy on other people. Because sometimes if you're not in a joyous mood, you don't want to be around that person. It's like the jogger at 4 o'clock in the morning and her ponytail's and she's just running and you're getting up.
No joggers. First of all, I've never, ever seen a runner, and I know many of them, who look happy when they're running.
And they're smiling.
Nobody's smiling when they're running.
Walking their dog and they got and they're just
And I think what you're talking about, you went back to this. You can have an optimistic attitude about what might be.
Mm-hmm.
You can have optimism, which is great. You can also do what you do, which I can't do, in that make the best out of a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
I use the Tony Curry quote. If you have to take the garbage out, look for the butterfly.
Yeah.
It's so great. Mm-hmm. I made an Instagram post on it. But it's true. I don't know how to do that very well. That's a hard thing. But I think the part underneath is what my wife says is, today I choose joy. Mm-hmm. I choose joy. Meaning, no matter how shitty something is, I'm not going to be fake happy. Yep. That's not what you're saying.
No. Nope.
But I am going to choose to be joyous at some level that's calibrated based on what's going on, and I will not let the circumstances of my situation right now take me out completely.
Yep.
Now, that being said, I will qualify that with a few things.
Yep.
The breakup of a relationship, the loss of a job, the death, the all those kind of things. This is not you have to be joyous through those things. But when you choose joy, what you're saying is, I'm going to ride the ups and downs, but I'm going to choose to be in a good place.
Yep.
And that's joy. Because I think the problem with the word joy is we instantly think Griswold happy.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Yeah.
But it does come from within. It is not easy. I am the first person to say that I struggle with choosing joy.
Well, we saw the Griswold thing, right? Because he did have joy. He did have moments where, obviously, it was not a joy situation. Then he found a way to get locked in the attic and turned it into joy.
Yes.
And then at the end of the movie, when everything fell apart, what did he do? He lost his brain and said, damn it, we're going to have the best damn Griswold Christmas we ever had. Everyone wanted to go home.
Right.
And it turned out okay, because it's a movie.
That's right.
Wanted to bring up something I thought was really interesting. I was listening to NPR yesterday, and we just had the midterms. I don't talk a lot of politics around here because I don't control it. And I actually put out a sample ballot. I mentioned a couple days ago, my 18-year-old son called me and said, you know, what do I do? I said, go vote. And he's like, what am I voting for? I said, there's 47 things. He said, 47 things? I said, there's 10 amendments. There's 37 things. You got the Shelby County coroner you have to vote for. He's like, what if I don't know this? People said, don't vote for it then. Vote for the things you know. Do a little research. And he's a super smart kid.
I was just going to say, you're a smart kid.
But the LGBTQ plus community was as well represented in this midterm election than any other midterm or any major election, general election that we've had in the history of this country.
Yep. Including the governor of Massachusetts.
They had an entire story about it yesterday on NPR. And I was kind of finding myself getting a little agitated.
Okay.
The first openly gay Vermont governor. I think it was Vermont.
No, it's Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Well, I thought it was Vermont.
Also Vermont?
I believe so.
Now we got two?
She may be the first lesbian.
This is the first openly gay lesbian governor of Massachusetts.
Okay, so something happened in Vermont, too.
I don't know.
You can look it up. She said something along the lines of, I'm here to let every little girl out there and know that you can be and do whatever you want.
Yeah.
We have proven that. And there were some also, and everything she said had to do with the fact that she was openly gay and or a lesbian. Again, you're looking up to make sure we have the right governor.
It's Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, okay.
Maura Healey.
I'm fine with that. Unprecedented. We're moving in a direction where we're being much more accepting of that. Obviously, she got voted in by those people, and she obviously got voted in by a lot of heterosexual people because not everyone in Massachusetts is gay.
You sure?
The old man in me was kind of going, you know,
yeah.
We didn't vote you in because you're gay.
No.
We didn't vote you in because you're a lesbian. We didn't vote you in because you're pro-LGBTQ+. I know some people did.
Sure.
But we're still talking about a small minority of people in this country that acknowledge themselves as in that platform. I think it's like 6 or 7%. The majority are not. And that kind of tells me something. And so if they want to recognize that, we're not voting you in because you're gay.
No.
We're not saying we need to have our first gay president or we need to have our first gay governor. And for them to continually bring that up during their platform speeches was, okay, what are we going to do here to move forward? What are you going to do for my country? What are you going to do for your state?
She wasn't bringing...
She did. She brought it up several times, and of course they were they were only playing the clips.
I was going to say
because that's what the story was about.
Well, yes,
and I get that.
But I also watched her. I watched the same interview. I watched an interview. I also watched her deflect it because it got ridiculous. It got to the point where they kept saying, "You're the first openly gay. You're the first openly gay. You're the first openly or female." And I watched her say a number of times, "Yes, here's what I'm going to do." And I think your point is very well taken. If we vote in somebody who is LGBTQ plus, part of the LGBTQ plus community, that is a relatively smaller percentage of people.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we voted this person in for other reasons.
Sure.
And I think that's fine, but I also think it's okay because the numbers are so small right now that we do acknowledge it. We forget LGBTQ plus. This has happened with women. Do you realize you're the first female vice president?
Mm-hmm.
You know, first female vice president of color.
Yeah.
You know, and again, on the one hand, it's like, that's awesome. That's amazing. But if I'm that person, of course I don't want to think that I've been voted in because of those two factors.
Yeah.
Pete Buttigieg is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the dudes. I don't care what your politics are. Look at the guy's resume. Rhodes Scholar.
Mm-hmm.
Veteran.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, he's gay, but it's the whole portfolio. And I think it's okay. It's kind of like changing the culture. If we say nothing about it, then we are not acknowledging what hasn't been, what needs to be acknowledged. If we only acknowledge that, then we take away the credibility of this individual. And again, I watched a couple interviews with her, and some of the journalists were like just hammering on it. You're a female.
Mm-hmm.
You're gay. You're a female. Yep. You're gay. And at one point, she's like, look, we got a lot of things to do in this state.
Yeah.
And yes, I want people to feel, and if you, when you listen to people who are politicians who represent underrepresented populations, most of them will say the same thing. I do want people who are women or gay or of color. I want them to see me
mm-hmm.
and say, this happened with Barack Obama. I want them to see me and say, I can, they're there, I can be there.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And I realize that you're going to have stories. It's a good storyline.
It's a great storyline.
Whenever you're the first person to the first
of anything,
woman,
the first transgender politician.
Yeah, I mean that's okay.
And then
that's
Rand
fine.
Paul won again.
And then obviously you have your people that will look at their politicians and say, I don't care if their platform is everything that I agree with, but I have to look at their character, and that's not the type of character that I dig. Not saying that I'm in that boat at all, but I'm saying a lot of people would say,
well, single issue.
Exactly.
Pro-abortion.
I mean, you got Herschel Walker right now. That whole thing is like just amazing to me. Not because I don't think Herschel Walker can't be a good politician. First of all, I don't think he can be because he's a former football player, and I just think he's going off his name alone. And he's obviously from the state of Georgia, and they love him there. But then the rape allegations coming up—that didn't,
well,
you know, back in the '70s, if that came up, you are not in office now. It's like, well, last time did it, Bill Clinton did it, and Donald Trump.
So here's the other one with that one.
And I'm not saying Republican, Democrat. I'm
no. So here's the other one: evangelical Christians coming out in droves voting for him,
mm-hmm.
and his opponent is a reverend.
Yeah, dude. Can we get past the stinking polls? I don't know.
Oh, the poll.
I watch Fox.
Yeah,
they do a pretty good job. Fox will wear me out after about 30 minutes. I can't do Fox because they push so hard one way, and I really want to be down the middle. That's why I listen to a lot of NPR. It's hard not to be biased one direction or the
That's
other
fine.
Because you're either one side of the night. And you can tell the way they form questions. You know, Fox always says, we'll go down the middle. You decide. No, you don't. I mean, because whenever you put a pro-liberal on, you know, you give them about 3 seconds to answer the question. And when you put a pro-conservative on, you give them 55 minutes to answer the question. So don't give me that shit. But, yeah, the polls are like, The fact that 72% of people in this country polled said that they don't like the direction this country is going in, and it wasn't that red tide that everyone talked about. I think Stephen Colbert said it's like, you know, washing that really red hat with your whites. Everything kind of turned out pink. It's kind of like, what are we doing here, man? I mean,
well, we got to fill TV too. Like you,
they're like, well, the 18 to 30 year olds, these Gen Zs, they don't do polls, and so they were the ones that got out there and voted.
This is all right with 3% of the vote in.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, and I think this is interesting. Brian Johnson, the lead singer of AC/DC, lives down in Saratoga. He's got Brian Johnson Racing.
Originally from
the UK.
Yep.
Was asked about our political situation in this country and if he's going to vote. I don't know if he can vote or not. I'm assuming he's a citizen. He's like, hell no. He's F politicians. He's like, I don't believe him. I don't trust him. He goes, I think it's just a big shit show. And I've never voted, and I'm never going to vote. And he goes, listen, if you think my vote is going to change the way we live in this country, then we're all screwed, because I don't know what the hell's going on. Now, he's lived an incredibly privileged life. He's very, very wealthy. He sings for AC/DC. He's got his own racing team. He's in good shape. It doesn't matter whether it's Republican or Democrat for him. He's going to be fine. For a lot of people, it is a direct response based on how things go. Talk about winning and losing. I mean, that's perfect for midterms. We'll talk about that on Fox 6. Did you win? A lot of people haven't slept since Tuesday, because their candidate did not win their race, and they think it's going to change the world that their candidate did not win. Oh my gosh, all these things are going to change in my life because this person did not win on Tuesday. And he said, you know, if we go back 20, 30 years ago, when only 20% of this country voted, things are pretty good. He said, he said it certainly seemed like we got along better. I don't know if economically, worldwide, this country was better. He said, we've always been the greatest country for a long period of time. He said, only after we were told, go out and vote, go out and vote, go out and vote. Your opinion matters. You need to go out and vote, 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 vote. Think about it. And it started in 2016. About 6 years ago, you could say the last 6 years have been the most polarized, most separated, most in-your-face country country's ever been. And we voted more so. And he's like, when everyone thought they had a vote and everyone said, do it my way, is when we got most polarized. And with a two-party system, it kind of makes sense. You know, you go into a voting stall and there are walls on either side. Why is that? So you can vote privately.
Yeah.
Shit, why do we have that? You're telling everybody when you go in who you're voting for. I mean, you don't talk about sex, religion, or politics. Right. Now, those are the first three things you bring up at Thanksgiving. By the way, I'm a lesbian. I'm giving up Catholicism, and I'm voting Republican. Oh, great. That's the first thing that Susie walks in the door from Tupelo, Mississippi, as she visits her parents. I mean, we feel the need to tell everybody how we feel about everything right now. Not, according to you, reading the room, knowing there's other people in that room that totally disagree with you. Why even bring that up?
Right.
And so I just think it's really interesting, because we've got these partitions. You know, my dad was a stout Republican in Ohio, always voted along
the party line.
And I asked him, I said, why? And because I'm a conservative, and this is we're God fearing, and would go on this whole thing, and I go, okay. And I, much like, you know, son wears the same type of underwear his dad wears, right? I wore grippies till I was 50, until I wanted to breathe a little bit. And so I was raised a Republican, in a Republican family. And I said on Tuesday, if we all just vote along, and I was telling my son this, are we Republican or Democrat? I said, you have to make the decision what you think you are, based on the candidates that you look at.
But I just hate
the fact that he had to ask me that question.
No, but who you are.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you can, if we unpack it, it makes more sense. So I've heard the rationale, and I agree with
this. Real quick, before you go, I told him that if you're just going in and voting along party lines, then you don't need to vote. If you're registered, listen to me.
Okay.
If you're a registered Republican, you should better make a phone call and say, I'm a registered Republican. Just mark me down for everything. Because if you just go and you don't know who the hell you're voting for, I don't know where the Shelby County corner is. If you just vote Republican on everything along party lines and you're not doing your homework, and I'll be the first to admit that I have voted Democrat and Republican. I've been voting since 1988.
People
are like,
voting,
what?
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, there are some situations where, quite frankly, despite the fact that I consider myself a Republican and conservative, I hate the word conservative because it sounds like you're a a lame. You just feel like you're
A little bunged up.
Yeah, and I don't like the word liberal either.
Free like liberals.
But there have been some situations where I've looked at a Democratic nominee, and I look at all their, and I'm like, it weighs a little heavier on the Democratic side, and people are like, they can't believe that, and I'm
But that's so there's an argument I've heard this time and again that voting around down party lines should be a statement that the platform or the views of this party as a whole are what I want to see in my country. And while there may be individuals within that party, and this is really why we have a problem now, because, you know, it's the whole idea of what does the party stand for?
Yeah.
And your dad and my grandfather, they could define for you what the party stood for. And they might even say, while I may not agree with any particular candidate, I want the party to win because I want the party's perspective.
I understand that.
To go that way. That's fine. I get that. But when you say, I am a Republican, I am a conservative, that is who I am, I call bullshit on that. To me, that's like, come on. That's not, now you're not thinking.
Yeah.
Now you're just lumping yourself in. Now, if you can say, here's the reasons why I am that, and this is why I'm voting for everybody in that political party, then whether I disagree with you or not, I get it. It's too easy of a default. Yep. Because so many people, they're not doing their homework. Yep. No, there's a lot of people who do.
There were Republicans and Democrats on that Shelby County ballot that I can name one on each side.
Yep.
They're not going to get anything done.
Right.
They haven't been in politics. They don't know what the hell they're doing. And quite frankly, I don't like their character.
Mm-hmm.
But they're Republicans. One was a Republican, one was a Democrat. And if I voted along those lines, I'm going to vote this slug in. I'm like, no, we're not going to do that.
Right.
I need some homework on the other person. I don't really believe in their party lines and some of their party. But that's, you know, we always talk about this country. We need to work together.
Right.
We need to cross the aisle.
Right.
Even Joe Biden said it yesterday. We need to cross the aisle. We need to work for it. We did it in gun reform. It was the first thing. Oh, my God. It was like, congratulations. For the first time in 100 years, we actually agreed on something. And I don't think until we start doing that, we're going to move. Now, a lot of people would say, you know, if it's 50-50 and down the middle, we're never going to get anything done. Or if a House is one way and a Senate's another. And that just really bums me out to think that we're not going to. The only way we're going to get something done is if you have the majority. What does that say about this country? If the majority was true and got their way in everything, we wouldn't have the first gay Massachusetts governor. Because it's a majority ship, and I just, you know, I don't know. I like to see both sides of the aisle, and I know that drives people crazy. There's probably, I can't believe you voted Democrat. Well,
but like, come on, stop. I mean, this gets back to the beginning of this conversation, which is, you want to change a culture, then people have to be willing to A, work together with one another, work in a compromising, collaborative way.
Yeah.
Works in marriages, works in organizations. It has to work in politics.
Yeah.
I do think, and you hear this a lot, we who are not in politics only see politics, right? We just see what we see. And particularly in this day and age, because of all the social media, because of the polarizing nature, the idea of working across the line, which used to be a good thing, now seen as a bad thing.
Yeah.
That being said, I mean, again, Mitch McConnell is a great example. Mitch McConnell, while everybody's like, la, 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 and Mitch McConnell's putting out this, they're all working at some level, negotiating behind the scenes.
Yeah.
They don't want to tell us that because we don't want to, how dare you? Are you kidding me? That's an Alabama coach talking to an LSU coach.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, they're like lawyers.
Right. Yeah, that's a great example.
I got news for you. Your politicians are going out and having dinner together tonight.
Yeah, right.
They're fighting each other on the floor, but the minute it's over, the two lawyers are going out and having drinks and joking about the case.
Because that's how we do get shit done.
Yeah. All right, great show. Curry and Claypo show. We'll podcast this later on this afternoon. You can check it out. Thanks for everyone watching this morning. And, of course, coming up here, what time is it?
It's 9:02.
Coming up here in about 28 minutes, we'll be on Fox 6. Check us out, WBRC on the Big Fox. We'll be on with Janice Rogers and Mike Dubberly. Make sure you download the TKR app, Tony Curry Radio, through Apple. Just pull up TKR. We have 5 stars across the board, or Tony Curry Radio on Android, and listen to great classic rock and roll. We have shows that start at 9 o'clock in the morning. We have Students of the Game, which is on right now on the TKR app. Great shows, and of course, so check out Tony Curry Radio Podcast. We got some great podcasts out there right now. One of our best ones is the Director's Chair with Mark Ingram that I started doing a couple weeks ago. We're working on a couple of new shows that we're going to be doing next week. And occasionally, I'll just reach out to a celebrity. Andrew Goff's going to be on next week.
Love it.
I have Jeff Cook of the band Alabama, who just passed away from complications from Parkinson's. Yeah. He died, I guess, on Tuesday.
Yeah.
His producer and architect in music, Dave Hammonds, is a good friend of mine.
Right.
I reached out to him. He's going to be doing a podcast with us. He's got some great behind-the-scenes stories. He was one of Jeff's best friends for 30 years. Yeah. So all kinds of interesting stuff. So check it out on our podcast network, and check us out on Fox 6 in the bottom of the hour. And thanks for watching.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.